Hello everyone, how are you doing? I'm Rob, a producer on the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition is for the 1st of June, 2022.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacon Centre. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news. As a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD, simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Christine. Speaking for us this week, we have myself, Rob, Helen, Mina, Christine, Ed, Liz, Bruno, Mary, Tim, Craig, Alastair, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news in the Black Country, and the weekly quiz with Mina, news from Wolves and West Bromwich Albion, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, the weather, information about how changes to the highway code may affect those with guide dogs, a 10-day workout, a royal fact book brought to us by Craig. And rounding us off, we hear how after over 200 years since its invention, Braille is still as useful as ever. However, we start this week with our Guess the Sound question. I'm going to play a sound clip, and all you have to do is simply guess what it is. So, here's this week's clip. Have a think on that, and Mina will reveal the answer later, alongside the usual quiz answers. We have now then, as always, some local news. Brought to us by myself, Rob, Liz, Ed, Angela, and first up, it's Christine.
West Midlands Metro services will resume between Wolverhampton and Birmingham in early June after they were suspended 2 months ago, it has been announced. The service, which has been out of action since March 19th after more cracks were found in the trams, is now set to return from the week commencing Sunday, June 5th. It comes despite an initial deadline of the end of May for the tram service to resume, which has been pushed back due to not enough trams being available, bosses said. Metro chiefs also said some of the trams may not be fully wrapped in blue vinyl around the doors due to the haste in reinstating them, but this will not impact on safety. And the trams will not be going along the full route as of yet, however, with the reinstated trams only running between Wolverhampton St George's and Birmingham Bull Street. A statement from Midland Metro Limited, operator of the West Midlands Metro, said, "We can confirm that West Midlands Metro services will resume in the week beginning Sunday, June 5th. This return to service has been enabled by the replacement of tram body panels progressing to schedule. We are now looking to accelerate repairs to get more trams back out on our network as quickly and safely as possible to restore a full service. With this acceleration, we remain very confident that a full service will be in operation in good time ahead of this summer's Commonwealth Games."
West Midlands Ambulance Service is on the brink of collapse, with its nursing director complaining he cannot carry on visiting families trying to explain avoidable deaths. Mark Doherty even pinpointed a date, August 17th, as the service's titanic moment when ambulances will not be able to pick patients up. Patients suffering from heart attacks, strokes and blood clots are dying every day due to ambulances being stuck outside hospitals for several hours, he said. An emotional Mr. Doherty told the WMAS Trust meeting, "The issue is immediate and urgent. We have been raising this issue for several years. I spent most of the last 2 weeks visiting families where we caused harm. I can't carry on doing that, and I am not willing to. Someone somewhere has got to stop this happening. We cannot carry on as an NHS causing patients harm. Some die. I can't carry on trying to explain something that is avoidable. He added, "This is the biggest problem facing the NHS right now. Last April, we reported 2 serious incidents, but this April, we reported 23. Director of Nursing Mark Doherty explained that as well as those patients dying in ambulances, those being rushed into hospital with heart attacks and strokes are affected. He said, "We are not even measuring the impact on those patients getting delayed care for heart attacks and strokes. This is reducing life expectancy and recovery rates. Patients are dying every day that shouldn't be dying every day. Their deaths are entirely predictable and of a scale that means we need to be taking this really seriously."
A Black Country MP has criticised selfish fuel protesters for worsening the cost of living crisis. Marco Longhi said parts of the country were grinding to a halt due to protesters blocking roads and interfering with key infrastructure. He said their actions were having a dire impact on the public purse and that was damaging to the environment. The Dudley North MP insisted the government's new public order bill, which passed its latest stage in the Commons last week despite Labour opposition, would enable police to clamp down on protesters. Mr. Longhi said, "The criminal minority who commit these acts disgust me. They have no concept of the real world and no concept of the misery that they bring onto those less fortunate than them. A protest is not peaceful if it blocks key roads or interferes with key infrastructure. New criminal, disruptive and self-defeating tactics carried out by a selfish minority in the name of protest are causing a more serious disruption to the British public, with some parts of the country grinding to a halt, and police resources diverted from the local communities where they really need them. The disruption does not stop simply at preventing us from getting from A to B. It is worsening the cost of living crisis. What is more, blocking a road forces our constituents to go miles out of their way in their cars to get around the idiots disrupting them, which not only costs an awful lot more in fuel, money that most do not have to spend, but means more fossil fuels being burnt and more pollution in our environment." He added, "Blocking roads and fueling stations is not the answer. We all want a greener environment, but behaving in such a selfish way and with such disregard to others is not the way to do it."
Up to 500 jobs could be at risk at the University of Wolverhampton as it halts student recruitment for 138 courses. A senior union negotiator said the cuts undermined Wolverhampton's promise to be the University of Opportunity as unions entered a formal dispute with management. Interim Vice Chancellor Ian Campbell told lecturers at the university that there would be no more than 500 staff redundancies to combat its £20 million deficit, which would constitute around a fifth of the university's staff. Now, the UK's largest academic union, the UCU, has announced that it has passed a motion to enter into a formal dispute with management at the University of Wolverhampton. Dr. Catherine Lamond, chair of the UCU Negotiation Committee at the university, said, "We've entered into a formal dispute with management because there has been no consultation with staff. Teachers could have made suggestions as to consolidating courses. Staff have had plenty of very creative ideas and suggestions, but we've not been asked at all. Staff were appalled at the scale of the cuts, and worried people apply for voluntary severance, not because they want to, but because they have to. There's a mutually agreed severance scheme, but it's quite heavy-handed, and we're worried about compulsory redundancies. We've had a new interim vice-chancellor this year, and he said that the accounts are terrible, and that there was a £20 million deficit. But this is a complete change in the story. The accounts were published in July last year, and they looked really healthy. So what's happened? He told us that we need to save all this money and that staff costs are huge. He said that there won't be any more than 500 staff redundancies out of 2,500 staff across the university. It's devastating."
Work on Dudley's new £24 million transport interchange is expected to start later this year, after plans to demolish the bus station were submitted. A planning statement submitted on behalf of the West Midlands Combined Authority reveals details of the scheme, which bosses see as a crucial part of the regeneration of the town centre. The development, which is expected to be finished by the end of next year, will see the demolition of the existing bus station and shelters, as well as Farm Foods and an old warehouse off Birmingham Street. Councillor Patrick Harley, leader of Dudley Council, said it was likely that work on the development would start this autumn, providing planning permission was granted. He said, along with the metro coming, the new interchange is a vital part of the development of the town. It will open up connectivity and allow many more people to come to Dudley to see our fantastic attractions such as the Black Country Living Museum and the zoo and the castle. The statement says the interchange is required to integrate bus and metro services, with the current bus station being described as in poor condition and said to not serve the local community well. It says the 2.77 hectare, 6.84 acre, development will incorporate the area around the bus station, Birdcage Walk, St Joseph Street and a car park bordering Porter's Field. It will see road improvements around Trindle Road and St Joseph Street from where the site will be accessed, while the ticket office will be replaced with a cycle shelter next to a new cycle route. A new car park will also be built.
Now it's time to hand over to Helen, who has for us this week's Beacon update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from Beacon. How are you? I'm in a really good mood ahead of a bank holiday weekend. See what I did there? We've certainly been getting into the celebratory spirit to mark the Queen's Platinum Jubilee here at Beacon. Our shop window displays alone really are fit for a queen. And if you want to grab yourself a right royal bargain, you can find details of all our stores on our website, www.beaconvision.org/shops. We'll be closed for the bank holidays on June 2nd and 3rd, but don't forget you can always shop 24/7 at our eBay store, www.ebay.co.uk/USR/Beacon Charity Shop. Our Hales Owen store is celebrating with 7 decades of style, with people able to guess what item came from what decade. My favourite was the pyjamas, face mask, toilet roll and COVID test. There's probably no need to guess which decade that came from. We've also been very excited for a special visitor joining us for our celebratory afternoon tea in honour of the Queen's Platinum Jubilee. We're serving up a delicious selection of sandwiches, cakes, tea and coffee at the Beacon Centre restaurant. And those who go along will be able to get their photo taken with Her Majesty. Well, it's a real-life cardboard cutout version, but still, quite impressive, eh? It's on June the 2nd, so depending on when you're listening to this, you may still be able to bag yourself a place. You can join us between 1pm and 3pm. Our standard teas are £12.95 per person. If you'd like a glass of Prosecco or wine, it's £15.95. And for your little princes or princesses, we're offering a children's version for just £6.95. Our restaurant will be specially decked out for the occasion and will be able to accommodate groups of up to 8 on a table. Book now by calling 01902 880111 or email inquiries@beaconvision.org. Now, National Volunteers Week is almost here. June the 1st to the 7th is an annual celebration of the amazing contribution that volunteers make at organisations such as Beacon up and down the country. We can't wait to share some of the stories of the incredible volunteers in the Beacon family who do so much to support people impacted by sight loss. We'll also be revealing the winners of our volunteer awards, which are being made especially for 2022 by our Fab Lab team. We'll be telling you much more next week. Lastly this week, could you help us win funds to support people impacted by sight loss? The Benefact Group is giving 250 nominated charities £1,000 each during June through their Movement for Good Awards. Nominations take just a few moments and all you have to do is follow the link www.movementforgood.com. That's www.movementforgood.com. movementforgood.com and search for Beacon Centre. Our charity number is 216092. That's 216092. Thank you for your support. The more nominations we get, the more chance we have of winning. So please help us spread the word. That's it for this week. I'll be back soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for that update, Helen. Up now, we have another block of local news. And starting this one off, we first hear Angela.
Car manufacturers need to get their act together to bolster security on vehicles as thefts continue to soar across the region, a police chief has said. Latest figures from West Midlands Police show car thefts have increased more than a third in the last year alone, with it almost quadrupling since 2015. Police officials believe the substantial increase is partly down to criminals taking advantage of keyless access to more modern vehicles across the region. Figures show in 2017 there were 5,671 car thefts in 1 year, and this has risen to 9,086 in 2019 and 8,453 in 2020. Now, the Office of the Police and Crime Commissioner has launched a crackdown as they called for manufacturers to take action and for tougher regulations to be implemented. Assistant Police and Crime Commissioner Wasim Ali said, "Cars have become more modern in the last 10 years or so. There's now keyless vehicles. The big issue with this technology is that there's devices that can replicate it. Before this, they would have had to pick the lock and enter the vehicle. But I would imagine a very small proportion of car thefts equated to that kind of methods of thefts nowadays, because more and more manufacturers are going the way of keyless cars. That's why we want to make sure we're calling this out to Jaguar Land Rover, to the BMWs, to Mercedes and other vehicles which have keyless access. They're making a whole lot of money, and what we're saying is, why not invest that money into helping the vehicle stay with the customer? I would like to tell them that when they're selling these cars, think of their customers and make sure the cars are kept with the customer. They need to get their act together. They have the responsibility to make sure their vehicles are safe and secure and won't be stolen, and we're going to keep calling them out until they are."
A former model who came within a whisker of becoming MP for Stourbridge is about to be turfed out of her £800,000 home after losing an inheritance battle with her stepchildren. Diana Code, who stood for the Tories in Stourbridge at the 2005 general election, has been told that the house left to her by her husband, Peter Dale Goff, will be sold, despite begging the judge to please help me in a handwritten letter. Miss Code, 71, lived at the four-bedroom property in Slough with her husband until his death in August 2013. Mr. Dale Goff's will granted his wife the right to live in the house for the rest of her life. It said that in the event of the property being sold with her consent, the proceeds would be split between Miss Code and Mr. Dale Goff's two children, Ben Dale Goff and Mary Jane Petit. But the case ended up in court when Miss Code took an unsuccessful action against her stepchildren at Slough County Court, asking for further provision from her late husband's estate. Her claim was dismissed in 2020, and she was ordered to pay her stepchildren's legal costs, which with interest have now risen to almost £100,000. Miss Code, who has been a catwalk model, personal assistant to a national newspaper editor and restaurateur before going into politics, pleaded with a judge not to evict her to raise money for the court costs. In a handwritten letter, she told the judges she had suffered stress and anxiety from the threat of losing her home and begged the judges to please help me. Barrister Mr. Aidan Briggs asked the court to make the order despite her pleas, saying it was the only way the stepchildren would see their money without making Miss Code bankrupt. Deputy Master Marsh rejected Miss Code's case and granted an order allowing her stepchildren to sell the house so their debts can be paid off.
The West Midlands had the fifth highest number of reported collisions involving e-scooters across Britain last year, official figures show. Department for Transport statistics revealed West Midlands Police had recorded 63 incidents in 2021, landing the area in the top five. Meanwhile, neighbouring police forces had considerably fewer, with Staffordshire Police and West Mercia Police recording 3 incidents each. Metropolitan Police recorded 510 incidents, Avon and Somerset had 96, Nottinghamshire Police had 74, and Merseyside had 72 incidents. The overall number of pedestrians injured after being hit by e-scooters was 4 times higher than in 2021, with 223 people travelling on foot wounded, including 62 who were seriously hurt. That is up from a total of 57 pedestrian casualties in 2020, which included just 13 serious injuries. The figures have been released just weeks after the government announced it plans to introduce newer legislation to govern the use of e-scooters, with private e-scooters often being used on public roads and pavements despite being banned. Legalised trials of rental e-scooters have been set up in dozens of towns and cities across England, with West Bromwich, Stafford and Birmingham the 3 areas to have e-scooter trials.
A new police superstation in the Black Country has been plunged into doubt after West Midlands Police was given an ultimatum over a land deal. Dudley Council Chiefs say they have grown frustrated with the force after failing to agree a price for the proposed site of Hall Street, despite months of negotiations. The authority has now given West Midlands Police just 2 weeks to meet its asking price, with bosses threatening to put the land back on the market if no deal is struck. Dudley Council is understood to have reduced its initial asking price of around £750,000. Plans for a new station to serve as the force's Black Country headquarters were first revealed in 2019, following a campaign by then Dudley North MP Ian Austin. It was included in the force's revised estates programme, published in November last year. The site off Hall Street, next to the Allen Nuttall factory, has been derelict for years after plans to build a mosque there never got off the ground. West Midlands Police is understood to have set aside an initial £1.2 million for the first stages of the project. A spokesperson for the West Midlands Police and Crime Commissioner, Simon Foster, said, "We remain committed to building a brand new, state-of-the-art police station in the centre of Dudley. We urge Dudley Council to do the deal in the interests of the people of Dudley. The town has been without a police station since the old one on New Street was shut down in 2017 as part of a cost-cutting measure."
Wolverhampton councillors in Finchfield and Castlecroft are calling for the police to take action after a spate of graffiti incidents in the area. Graffiti tags have been sprayed on telecoms infrastructure, bins and bus shelters on several roads in the area, as well as the wall of the West Acres pub in Finchfield and in the Smestow Valley Nature Reserve. The tags are feared to be a sign of gang activity in the area. Now, Technor Whittick councillor Ellis Terrell, together with his ward colleagues Wendy Thompson and Jonathan Crofts, has urged local police officers and Wolverhampton Council to step in and remove the graffiti, as well as attempt to identify the culprits. He is also asking anybody who may know who the graffiti tags are associated with to contact the police on 101. Councillor Terrell said, "Unfortunately, we have seen a spate of graffiti incidences in the Finchfield and Castlecroft areas, mainly on telecoms boxes and bus shelters, but also, sadly, on the old Compton Halt platform in the Smestow Valley Nature Reserve. I've spoken to council staff and also raised it with the local neighbourhood police, who should be working to identify who the graffiti tags belong to. This may be a low-level crime, but it is time that the authorities crack down on it. It is detrimental to the local area, and ultimately the taxpayer foots the bill for cleaning it up. So if anybody has any information about who these graffiti tags are linked to, or if they see anybody spraying graffiti, I would encourage them to contact the police on 101.
Now it's that time of the week again. It's the quiz questions, brought to us by Mina.
Hello and welcome to this week's Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. What was the original name for the Chelsea Flower Show? Question 2. What was the first show garden exhibited? Question 3. In what year did our Queen first attend the flower show as Queen? Question 4. Who created their sensory garden at the flower show last year? Question 5. How big was the floor space of the Great Marquee? And finally, question 6. How much plasticine was used to make the plasticine garden? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show. But for now, good luck.
Thank you for those questions, Mina. I'll, of course, be giving those a ponder as we go through the show. But for now, we have a new block of local news. And starting this one off, we first hear from Christine.
Sessions for young people have resumed at The Way Youth Centre after a temporary shutdown. The Youth Zone on School Street, Wolverhampton, suspended evening and weekend sessions for young people 7 weeks ago in a shock announcement ahead of the Easter holidays. Now, bosses say some sessions, run alongside partners the YMCA and Wolves Foundation, have now started at the site, with more set to be rolled out in the coming weeks. They include multi-sports, art, cooking, music and climbing. It comes as a city councillor called for a structured programme at the site, which is undergoing a major overhaul of operations after bosses said the pandemic forced them to reshape how services are delivered. A spokesman for Onside, which supports the running of The Way, said, "We are delighted to resume a number of sessions at The Way. These are being held between Tuesday and Saturday. These sessions include multi-sports, art, cooking, music and climbing, and we are delighted to partner with our partners at the YMCA and Wolves Foundation on these. More sessions will continue to be added over the coming weeks, and we would encourage young people to take a look online or give us a call to find out what is on offer and then come down to The Way." A major recruitment drive is underway at the site after a mass upheaval of staff, with positions available in youth work management and delivery, while holiday club support workers are also being sought.
Beer drinkers can rest easy. A global shortage of glass won't lead to a rationing of their favourite tipple. Breweries across the West Midlands offered reassurance after warnings that the UK is on the brink of a bottled beer shortage. One leading wholesaler says suppliers are already starting to deal with a glassware shortage as prices jumped up by 80% in the last 12 months due to rising energy costs. The warning comes after beer experts in Germany said the country could be facing a glassware shortage this summer, with their small and medium-sized breweries expected to bear the brunt. Businesses in the West Midlands say they are aware of the problems, but that there is no need to panic. Director of Edwin Holden's bottling company, Mark Hammond, said that the wood Saturn business, which buys in all its bottles, was experiencing some problems with importing bottles from Europe, but supply from the UK was pretty steady. "We have no current shortage of bottles," he added. The business in George Street, which carries out bottling for Holden's brewery and breweries across the West Midlands and further afield, was at full capacity during the height of the coronavirus pandemic. Mr. Hammond said demand for bottling had slowed since then. Wolverhampton-based Carlsberg Marston's Brewing Company, which has a bottling plant in Burton-upon-Trent, said its procurement team had reported that it has a good supply of glass bottles for CMBC in the UK. We do not see any supply issues on the horizon that will directly impact us, said spokesman Edward Halliday. Beer accounts for more than £7 billion of spend in 2020, putting it as the most popular alcoholic drink choice in the UK.
The Maryhill Shopping Centre has welcomed international fashion brand J. Lee Collection to its malls. J. Lee Collection specialises in unique and innovative designs of everything from luxury sportswear to high-quality accessories. The new store opened its doors on Saturday, creating new jobs in the centre, and joins a host of recent openings including the fast-growing Australian coffee chain Gloria Jean's, Pizza Hut Express, Artisan Bakery Batched, and family-owned bakery The Brownie Box. Jonathan Poole, centre manager at Maryhill, said, "The opening of the new J. Lee Collection store builds on a wide range of fashion brands on offer at the centre. With its premium women's wear offer, J. Lee Collection gives shoppers a touch of luxury through its range of high-quality pieces and stylish accessories. Maryhill is a one-stop retail destination for visitors in the region with something for everyone. The new shop is on the Upper Mall between Primark and M&S.
Controversial plans to convert a historic hotel in Wolverhampton into a new Lidl branch have been branded a potential traffic nightmare by people on social media. Wolverhampton Council planners backed the move to demolish the Mercure Goldthorne Hotel, which dates back to 1890, and build a new budget supermarket there. In its day, the Quality Hotel was a favourite of showbiz stars, including Bob Monkhouse and Dinah Dawes. But the plans have been met with a mixed reception, some supporting the opportunity for new jobs and others dreading the surge of traffic it's expected to bring. Lidl says the new development will bring 40 full and part-time jobs that will boost the local economy. Although several committee members were against the proposal, Chair Councillor Anwyn Muston voted to go ahead with the plan. Some Facebook users reminisced on the good times when the hotel was in its prime. Glennis Ball said, "So sad to see it looking so neglected. My mum and dad had their wedding reception there in the 1960s. It was a lovely hotel back then." Mark Smith commented, "Such a shame it can't be restored and used as a classy hotel like it used to be." Some are enthusiastic about the opportunities it will bring for local job seekers. Rob Farmer said, "The place has been underused for over 10 years. If there's an opportunity to allow the site to thrive and create jobs, let it happen." But many are dreading the congestion. Sally Bradshaw commented, "Disgrace. Same old story. It will be a nightmare for traffic." Neil Bryan agrees that it will be a traffic nightmare, saying, "Can you imagine getting in and out of the car park?" But there might be a silver lining, as Andrew Hukin said, "Good. That means the one at Finchfield might get a little less busy."
A McDonald's branch in the Black Country will open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on a permanent basis, despite concerns over boy racers. Dudley Council planners backed the move for the Birmingham New Road store in Coseley to open up fully after a trial of the hours was completed. The fast food chain had been on a trial run of the hours since April last year, but can now fully open after the hours were made permanent on Monday. It comes despite claims from residents the branch is a magnet for antisocial behaviour amid other criticisms of the litter and smell caused by the chain. One resident wrote to the council to complain, "It is a magnet for antisocial behaviour because it draws kids as a gathering point." On Sunday, March 20th, a McDonald's delivery person had food stolen by feral kids that have terrorised the area for some time. Neighbours have had windows smashed or cars damaged. The 24/7 operation at Coseley McDonald's had been on trial since April 2021 as part of a previous planning requirement. Dudley Council approved the decision for the all-night hours to become permanent at last night's planning committee. Vice Chair of Dudley Planning Committee, Councillor Andrea Goddard, said that only one disturbance had been brought to the Council's attention and that denying McDonald's this application didn't seem sensical. However, McDonald's will have to comply with some requirements under the approval. Lights must be dimmed during late night opening hours to avoid unnecessary light pollution, and the restaurant must not exceed the levels of background noise in the area between 11 p.m. and 7 a.m.
Up next, we hear about how changes to the highway code will affect crossing the road safely with guide dogs.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, this is Tim with a story written by Fiona about potential confusion among guide dogs and their owners around the new highway code. Some changes to the highway code applying to England, Scotland and Wales came into force earlier this year, putting greater emphasis on the safety of vulnerable road users and pedestrians. Rules for all types of road users have been updated to improve the safety of people walking, cycling and riding horses. Following a consultation last year, 8 changes have been made in all, but the one causing confusion among guide dog owners is the new Rule 2, which clarifies what pedestrians should do when crossing the road at junctions. The new Rule 2 says that when people are crossing or waiting to cross at a junction, other traffic should give way. And once people have started crossing and traffic wants to turn into the road, people crossing have priority and traffic should give way. It also specifies that people driving, riding a motorcycle or cycling must give way to people walking and cycling on a zebra crossing or on dual pedestrian cycle crossings. The Guide Dogs charity report that guide dog owners have approached them with questions about these Rule 2 changes and how they'll affect working with their dogs. For example, some guide dog owners have wondered whether changes will have to be made to the way guide dogs are trained. On this point, guide dogs have offered reassurance, saying they won't need to change how dogs are trained, as the updated highway code will make little difference to the dog's understanding of safety in traffic. They say our dogs are taught to be aware of moving vehicles and respond to any that may present a threat to safety. However, it's the person who takes the responsibility for safe places and times to cross the road. Stationary vehicles are not a threat to safety, and our dogs already cross in front of cars that stop and give way at zebra and pelican crossings. Dogs are unlikely to interpret these differently to any other road when car drivers attempt to follow the new code. Other guide dog owners have asked what they should do if a driver stops for them to cross, and others have wondered if they could rely on drivers to follow the new rules. On these points, the charity say, we're currently recommending that you don't change your behaviour when crossing the road. You should take control of the situation and only cross when you feel it is safe to do so. In many cases, not proceeding in front of vehicles at junctions will remain the safest option, including when traffic is giving way to you. Whilst one driver may follow the new guidance, other drivers may not. You should not assume that you are totally safe to proceed when a single car offers to give way to you. On its website, Guide Dogs have published their responses to some of the most common questions about changes to the highway code for pedestrians crossing the road at junctions. You can find all the Guide Dogs highway code questions and answers online at tnflink.uk/115. That's tnflink.uk/115.
TNF Soundings.
Up next, we have our final block of local news for this edition. And starting this one off, we first hear from Ed.
Children will have a new space to explore thanks to the opening of a roleplay centre. Playtropolis has opened its doors in Womburn and will provide a fun and immersive experience for children. The centre offers 9 different roleplay locations, meaning children will never be short of activities whilst they explore and take on a variety of job roles. And for the adults, there's a cafe to supervise children from a distance while enjoying a coffee or food. The idea for the centre was born throughout lockdown, with Rebecca Murray lamenting the unreliable British weather, creating a desire to offer an outlet for children's imagination. Rebecca, managing director of Playtropolis, said, "Through lockdown with my son, we had nothing to do. We explored all the parks in the Midlands, but wanted something more. I then had the idea and Playtropolis was born. We started putting things in motion a year ago and now we are ready. It's been a long journey to get the unit and get everything fitted out, but it has been all worthwhile. We are very excited to open and get people through the door. We have people buzzing for it. We want to ignite children's imagination. I want it to be a place they look back and say, I used to love that place. It is something a bit different. We have a space centre which offers sensory experiences for children too. We want children to get lost in their imagination and have fun.
Shoppers are being praised for supporting a thriving town centre market that was visited by a television star. Bruce Jones, who played Les Battersby in the soap Coronation Street, called in at Briarley Hill Market Hall during a recent visit to the area and said such shopping facilities were a godsend to ordinary people. The market is lovely. Don't ever lose it. To me, a market is the heart of the community, Jones said. The actor had been paying a visit to Briarley Hill Civic Hall when he called into the market. His comments were welcomed by ward representative Councillor Adam Davies. Councillor Davies said, Briarley Hill Market has been at the heart of our community for generations and it's rightly still going strong. The traders do everything they can to make sure they offer the products people want at a reasonable price, and their regular events and fun days give people even more of a reason to shop at the market and visit the town. By shopping local and supporting the small businesses on the market, we can all play a part in making sure this unique hub of our community carries on thriving for generations to come.
A pigeon trapped in a disused pub in Willenhall has been rescued by the RSPCA and released back into the wild. The pigeon had become trapped between the glass and a piece of wood which had been used to board up the windows at the Castle Pub, located on the corner of Peel Street. A concerned member of the public spotted the pigeon and contacted the RSPCA, who attended last week. RSPCA Inspector Claire Davey said, "The pigeon had become trapped in a window three stories up. The board didn't go right to the top of the window, so the pigeon had got through the gap and had dropped down and unfortunately couldn't get back out. Claire wasn't able to access the window, so she called on the assistance of the West Midlands Fire Service, and a crew from the Willenhall Fire Station quickly arrived to help. The crew were fantastic and used their specialist working at height equipment to get to the window and get him out," said Claire. "Luckily the pigeon was unharmed, and apart from being a bit distressed from the whole ordeal, I was able to release him back into the wild at a local park. It was great to see him fly off happily. He must have been very stressed being confined in such a small space, so it was great to let him out. I'd like to thank the fire service for their assistance, which once again demonstrates the strong working partnership we continue to have."
There were celebrations as Dudley Zoo staff watched its four critically endangered Bornean orangutans exploring their brand new £500,000 outdoor enclosure for the very first time. After a year-long build, the large grassed enclosure adjacent to their indoor den area was completed last week, with Jazz, Sprout, Digimat and Benji accessing the new space over the last few days. Dudley Zoo and Castle curator Richard Brown said, "It was a fantastic sight to see the orangutans coming into the new enclosure and immediately exploring the climbing apparatus, which showcases the natural behaviours of the arboreal ape species. This enclosure is life-changing for the orangutans and was quite an emotional moment for staff to witness. The new enclosure, which includes a large timber frame, hammocks, shelters, webbing and ropes, has been part funded through public donations after the zoo launched an appeal during its 80th anniversary with a fundraising onesie walk." Richard added, "The pandemic has forced us to defer some of our development plans across the site, but we were always determined to bring our orangutan enclosure plans to fruition. We started work exactly a year ago using local builders and suppliers, and we're all incredibly proud to achieve this long-term goal, especially during these troubled times. Work will now turn to redeveloping and combining the orangutan's original outdoor space, and the attraction hopes to officially open the new enclosure with a celebratory day during the summer."
Excited locals turned out in their droves for the opening of Tetton Hall Pool for the first time in 2 years. the popular outdoor pool was officially reopened on Saturday after passing water safety checks and will be available for splashing until September the 11th. Situated in the heart of Tettenhall's Upper Green, the pool had to close throughout 2020 due to the coronavirus pandemic. Those looking forward to visiting the pool are being encouraged to enjoy the water safely and to be considerate to local residents and other users. Wolverhampton Council looks after Tettenhall Pool, and over the years it has attracted many visitors from across the city and proven to be extremely popular during the school holidays. Councillor Steve Evans, Cabinet Member for City Environment and Climate Change for Wolverhampton Council, said, "We know how popular Tettenhall Pool is during the warmer weather, and we've been busy getting it ready over the past few weeks for plenty of summer fun. Hopefully there will be some hot days on the horizon, so I'd just like to remind people of the importance of wearing hats and sunscreen while taking a dip. And do make sure you wear suitable clothes and shoes." Meanwhile, plans to invest £500,000 to improve facilities in East Park are moving forward, following feedback from hundreds of local residents and young people. The results of local community consultation, led by an independent research company, are being reviewed by the council to identify the most sustainable and cost-effective options. Following this, a full public report will be prepared with recommendations on the proposed way forward, and there will be further public engagement, especially with local young people, to shape plans for the park.
Coming up now on this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we have our very own Flashback Roger, with his Did You Know feature.
Hello again everyone, into June already, so with any luck we should be getting a good spell of warmer weather to enjoy. I know that everyone concerned with organising outdoor events will be praying for sunshine, as did the folks in London last week for the Chelsea Flower Show. Now then, did you know that? The Chelsea Flower Show, organised by the Royal Horticultural Society, is being held in the grounds of the Royal Hospital Chelsea London each year, apart from the war year since 1913. It was first called the RHS Great Spring Show in 1862, where it was first held in the long-vanished RHS Gardens in Kensington. A rock garden was the first type of show garden to appear at Chelsea in the 1920s. Between the two world wars, rock gardens were probably the most popular feature of the show, drawing large crowds. In 1980, there were only 8 show gardens at Chelsea. This more than doubled by 1985. And the Queen has a long-standing history at Chelsea. Her Majesty has been the RHS Royal Patron since 1952 and was a regular visitor to the Chelsea Flower Show with her parents as a child. But her first visit to the show as Queen was in 1955. She attended RHS Chelsea more than 50 times during her 70-year reign. To mark its 90th anniversary last year, the Guide Dog Sensory Garden used sculptures, planting and a changing pathway to illustrate the journey that someone with sight loss takes, from fear and isolation to a life of enrichment and independence. It was designed to be enjoyed by people with sight loss by using flower arrangements in vivid blocks of colour and using different textures, sounds, smells and even tastes, with fruit trees and a trickling stream. The Great Marquee, which was first put up in 1951, was named in the Guinness Book of Records as the world's largest tent of 3.5 acres. In 2000, it was replaced by the current modular structure, but the remains of the old tent were put to good use. It was cut up and made to use 7,000 bags, aprons and jackets. One year, there was even a plasticine garden. Television presenter James May made a garden entirely from plasticine for RHS Chelsea in 2009, consisting of 2.5 tonnes of plasticine in 24 colours, moulded into an English cottage-style garden with a twist. It failed to win any awards, but protest was averted when James was presented with an RHS gold medal made of plasticine. Well, It's hats off for me to everyone concerned in staging such a show every year. It always amazes me how clever and skillful they all are. For me, well, it makes my little plot look more tatty than ever. If I entered mine as a show garden, I think I'd have to call it an urban wreck. Any road up above, to lovingly tend my weeds and admire how they resist my vain attempts at horticulture. Till next week then, I'll say bye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra.
Cheers very much for those facts, Roger. Up now, it's time to move over into the sport. Bruno Large welcomes Wolves' squad overhaul and believes the natural transition will allow the club to progress. John Ruddy's departure has already been officially announced, while Fernando Marcel and Romain Saiss are expected to follow him out the door as Wolves shift some of their older and more experienced players. Although negotiations are ongoing over a new deal for João Moutinho, his future is also very much up in the air as Wolves face a squad rebuild this summer. But Large believes this change was needed and can help Wolves transition into next season as he looks to add more of an attacking style to the team. When asked if it was time for a new cycle in the squad, Large said, "I don't like to talk about cycles, it's a natural transition. The signals that we've had all season is to try and understand. We've learnt these things with experience and reading what the big managers are saying. Maybe 10 years ago, I read Sir Alex Ferguson's book. He said things like that. I love my kids as sons, but when they drop their performance, I'm the first guy to shake their hand. It's time to move on, and we need to replace him to continue with these standards. I also want that pressure for me. You give players respect and pay their salaries, so when they're in form and you don't give them the same things, we need to find solutions. That's why Ferguson was in a position for 20 years and won titles every time. He did that with a lot of players. Players gave him a lot of things, but in the end, shake his hand and we need to move on. We need to understand that. The other thing is replacing top players. Maybe Man United don't lose players because it's hard for other teams to buy them, but for us, it can be easy. One player we miss, like Jota, maybe it can happen with one or two and we need to replace him in the best way. Sometimes it's not just player by player. We can miss one and buy two, and we are a more balanced team. We need to do that transition from one season to another. John Swift is determined to solve some of Albion's problems in the final third after arriving at the Hawthorns from Reading. Widely seen as one of the best players in the Championship, Swift joined the Baggies on a free transfer last week, and he has vowed to add more flair to an Albion side that struggled going forward last season. "I would say that whether you've seen me play once or over 100 times, I always try and play the same way," Swift said. "My game is all about picking up the ball in dangerous areas at the pitch and trying to make things happen in an attacking sense. I always want the ball. I always want to dribble with the ball. I always want to try and create opportunities for me and my teammates. I managed to get quite a few goals and assists last season at Reading, and I'm focused on making sure I have another season where I manage to get plenty of both again. You always want to try and improve as a player, and I believe playing for Albion will help me do that. I want to be a player who can help push this team forward and create plenty of opportunities in the final third of the pitch." Swift continued, "I'm really excited to come into this team and to try and help score more goals. When you look at the squad, there's some really, really good players here. I look forward to the challenge of fighting all season for a shot at promotion." Are you ready to get moving? Well, let's hope so, because up now, we have the 10-today workout.
Hello everyone, this is 10 Today, a 10-minute set of exercises to do at home to help keep yourself active. Before we get to today's presenter, a couple of housekeeping points to note. The 10 Today project is funded by the Big Lottery and Sport England, and when you're doing the exercises, it's important that you don't push yourself too far, and by taking part, you agree to 10 Today's terms and conditions. You can read these terms and conditions at tnflink.uk/10t, and the 10t is the digit 1, the digit 0, and the letter t. And please remember that you agree to take part at your own risk. Today's exercises are brought to you by Mary, and here she is.
Hello and welcome to 10 Today, Series 2, Session Number 2. These are short, 10-minute physical activity routines, which will get you moving and stretching. They're great for your health, including boosting your mood. And very importantly, they're designed to support your everyday movements, your functional fitness, your flexibility, balance and mobility, such as when you have to reach up, turn, bend down, and so on. These simple routines will help you with that. Just take them at your own pace. There are plenty of options. If an exercise feels too much, then just take it easy and have a break. All the exercises can be done either standing up or sitting down. Just do whatever feels good for you today. When lifting your arms or knees, only go as far as is comfortable. And if you have any problems with your knees or hips, take care not to twist them during the movements. It can also help to pull in your tummy when you're bending your back. And just breathe normally throughout these activities. We want you all to do these activities safely. You are responsible for monitoring how you're feeling throughout the sessions. And if you feel any discomfort or pain, for example, if you feel unwell or dizzy or experience palpitations, then please stop and seek medical advice. By taking part, you agree to our terms and conditions. Please read our terms and conditions on the 10 Today website at 10today.co.uk. Please remember, you agree to take part at your own risk. If you're remaining seated, it would be ideal if you can use a hard chair, preferably one without arms, such as a dining chair that you can sit upright in with a straight back and your feet flat on the floor. If you're standing, just step your feet hip-width apart, relax your shoulders and take a good strong stance. And you might want to have a sturdy chair nearby to hold onto sometimes for balance. So we're going to start with a warm-up. You're just going to quickly tap or pat different parts of your body. So briefly tap along each arm, one at a time, in different places. Your upper arm, your forearm and your wrist. And do the same on both arms. Then pat the top of both legs, just quickly tapping up and down your legs in various places towards your knees for a few seconds. Great, you should be nicely warmed up now and ready to move. So we're going to start with swing back. So with your feet hip-width apart and your shoulders relaxed, stretch both arms out in front of you at shoulder height with your palms facing down. With your feet still facing forward, turn your upper body to the left and swing both arms back on that same side so they're pointing past your shoulders or just as far as is comfortable. Then come back to the center and turn your upper body to the right this time, swinging your arms back as you go. So keep going as you turn each time from left to right. Swing your arms back, keeping them as level as you can. So turning left, back to the center, then to the right. That's it. Just a few more times now. Try to stretch your arms out a little bit further if you can. This is great for your hip rotation, your shoulders and your arms. Next up, it's spring up. Take a slightly wider stance with your feet to start with and your toes pointing slightly outwards. If you're standing, bend your knees slightly into a squat position. You're going to raise up and then lower back down again, bending those knees. Lift both arms to around waist height with the elbows bent and palms facing upwards as you rise, then lower them down again as you go back into that squat position. Keep going with this for a few more times. Now, if you're sitting and you're able to lift your bottom slightly off the chair, you can raise up that way. If not, just press through the soles of your feet so you get that contraction in your legs. So just a couple more. Come up and then come down again. Try and go a little bit higher and down a bit lower if you can. It's great for your inner thighs, your legs and your buttocks. Now it's time for row the boat. As the name says, this is a rowing action. You're going to start by stepping your right foot forwards and leaning forwards. Stretch both arms out in front of you with your palms down. Keep your arms a few inches apart and at shoulder height. Now make two fists as if you're reaching to grasp the oars. Then in one flowing movement, pull your arms back, bring your upper body back and step back. Then step forward with your left foot. As you lean forwards, stretch out your arms, gripping those oars again, then pull back and step back. So just keep going with this movement for a few more times, alternating your feet each time as you reach out to grasp the oars. Try to pull a little bit further back if you can, and grip tighter to work your wrists and hands. This is really good for your arms, shoulders and your balance. Now we're going to carry the cauldron. So raise both arms straight up in the air, above your head, as high as you can. Imagine the shape of a big round cauldron and that there are three stacked one on top of each other. Bring both arms slowly downwards as if you're tracing the circular outline shape of these three cauldrons with your hands. Bend your knees as you go lower. So follow the outline to make circular movements with your arms. First going out around that top cauldron, then bringing your hands in, out again around the second cauldron and back in, making a lovely flowing in and out movement until you reach the bottom. Straighten back up and repeat, starting with your arms high above your head and tracing the outlines of those three cauldrons to make circular in and out movements as your arms come down. Let's just do this a couple more times, making even bigger circles if you can. This is another one that's good for your shoulders and your arms. That's great. So next up, it's Sea Storm. So step your right foot forward with your arms stretched straight out in front of you at shoulder height. Keep your arms body width apart with your palms facing up. Then sweep them upwards together above your head. Then turn your palms down and step back as you bring your arms back down to your sides. Now step forward with your left foot, arms stretched out in front with your palms up, and repeat that lovely flowing arm movement, sweeping the arms up with your palms up and lowering them down with your palms down. Do this a few more times. Stepping forwards as the arms go up and stepping back as the arms come down. Do just try to get your arms a little bit higher if you can. This is great for your back, your shoulders and your arms. The next one is Circle the Sky. So with the usual starting position of your feet hip-width apart and shoulders relaxed, bend forwards with soft knees if you're standing, and lower both arms until your hands are in front of your knees. They might be lower if you're sitting. Then straighten back up, raising both arms above your head and pushing your hands upwards. Keep your arms as straight and as high as you can. Then rotating your wrist, use your hands to make separate small circles in the air. Make those circles three or four times, then bend your knees again and lower your arms, reaching the hands down to your knees. Straighten up, push your hands upwards and repeat those circles in the air with your hands. Do this movement a couple more times now. You can make wider circles if you can and reach a little bit higher. This is really good for your chest and core, and your balance too. Well done. Now it's Cloud Hands. So just position your hands a few inches out in front of you, as if you're holding a ball, with one hand underneath the ball and the other one on top. The top hand should be roughly level with your forehead, and the bottom hand level with your upper body. Then swap the position of your hands by lowering the elbow of your top arm and raising the other one. Turn your hands continuously from top to bottom and back again. First one way, then the other. Then start turning your upper body as well, keeping your feet still and facing forwards. Turn first to the right, back to the centre, and then to the left. Back to the centre, turning your hands all the time. Keep going with this movement, just turning your upper body from side to side. Take your arms a bit higher if you can, or imagine you're holding a bigger ball. This is good for your coordination and balance. Next up, it's hands to feet. If you're standing, you can hold on to a sturdy chair for balance. Lift one foot off the floor, bending your knee as far as is comfortable. Then aim to briefly touch the foot of your raised leg with the opposite hand. If you can't reach your foot, don't worry, just reach down towards it. Lower your foot back down to the floor, then do the same again with your other leg and the opposite hand. If you're standing and holding onto a chair for balance, don't alternate each time, just do a few on the left side and then a few more on the right. Carry on, just lifting each leg and reaching your opposite hand down towards your raised foot. Lift your leg a little bit higher if you can. This is another one that's good for your balance and coordination. So this next one is called single arm circles. So raise both arms and stretch them straight out to each side, keeping them at shoulder level if you can, palms facing down. Then rotate both arms backwards at the same time, moving them from your shoulders to create small circles with each arm. Do that for a count of 10. That's great. Then rotate both arms forwards, creating circles in the opposite direction for another count of 10. Keep going, making bigger circles if you can, and keeping your arms at shoulder level. This is a really great one for your arms and your shoulders too. And the last one is aim low. So with your arms down by your sides, you're going to do a lunge. So step your right foot forward and bend that knee as far as comfortable, making sure it isn't reaching past your toes when you look down. Keep your other leg positioned behind with that foot slightly raised on its toes. It's just the same if you're sitting and you might want to come a bit further forward in your chair so you've got more room to move. Then swing both arms forwards in front of you and up as high as is comfortable. Now step back as you bring your arms back down to your sides. Then switch feet. So you're stepping forward with your left foot, bending that knee and swinging your arms out in front and up at the same time. Then step back, pulling your arms back again. Keep going with this, just alternating your feet each time. That's good. Couple more times now. It's another good one for your core and balance. So that's all the exercises. So we're just going to finish with a quick shake to cool down. So raise both arms up above your head towards the ceiling and just briefly wave your hands and arms in the air. Then lift one leg slightly from the floor if you can. Shake it out in the air for a second or two. Raise the other leg and shake that one too. Or you can just shake your upper body instead. So that's the end of the session. Great work, everyone. We hope you enjoyed it. Doing 10 today just 3 times a week can have positive benefits for your physical health and improve your well-being too. It's short, it's fun, and you'll simply feel better. So do keep going.
Do you want to know what the weather's going to be like for this upcoming bank holiday weekend? Well, the person in the know is up now. It's Mina.
The weather for this week ahead looks to be sunny and settled. Temperatures for the week will be hovering around 21 degrees. UV levels are expected to be moderate throughout the week. The sunrise and sunset times are 4:47 a.m. for the sunrise and 9:28 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 3rd and Saturday 4th of June, we have sunny spells with a maximum temperature of 20 degrees. On Sunday 5th of June, we have light cloud and a small breeze with a maximum temperature of 19 degrees. And from Monday 6th of June all the way through to Thursday 9th of June, we have sunny spells and a whisper of wind with a maximum temperature of 20 degrees. So, that's your forecast for this week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Up next, we have Craig, who has for us facts all about the upcoming Jubilee celebrations.
Hello, I'm Craig, and today I've got for you facts about the Queen ahead of the upcoming Jubilee celebrations. Fact number one, on 9th of September 2015, the Queen became the longest reigning monarch in British history, surpassing the reign of her great-great-grandmother, Queen Victoria. Fact 2. Her Majesty is better travelled than any British monarch before her. Within the Commonwealth alone, she's made over 150 visits during her reign. Fact number 3. At least 35 countries have issued coinage with the image of the Queen. Fact number 4. The Queen has been served by 14 Prime Ministers of the United Kingdom. The first Prime Minister was Winston Churchill. Thank you.
Have you done any good at the quiz this week? Well, now's the time to find out, as we have the quiz answers.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. What was the original name for the Chelsea Flower Show? And the answer, the RHS Great Spring Show. Question 2. What was the first show garden exhibited? And the answer, a rock garden. Question 3. In what year did our Queen first attend the flower show as Queen? And the answer, 1955. Question 4. Who created their sensory garden at the flower show last year? And the answer here is the Guide Dogs Association. Question 5. How big was the floor space of the Great Marquee? And the answer, 3.5 acres. And finally, question 6. How much plasticine was used to make the plasticine garden? And the answer here, 2.5 tons. How did you do? Great, I hope. But if not, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, did you get the answer to this week's Guess the Sound question that Rob asked at the start of the show? Here's one more chance to hear it before I tell you the answer. The sound you just heard was a recording of a bird flapping its wings. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we hear about Braille continues to thrive 200 years after its invention.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
This is Alastair Hutton with an article about learning to love Braille. How often do you use a 200-year-old invention in your daily life? You may be surprised to hear that 30,000 visually impaired people in the UK do just that to help them communicate. So do thousands of people all over the world. They use Louis Braille's revolutionary tactile writing system, which he launched in 1824 when he was just 15 years old. Amazingly, he started developing it when he was aged 11. His ingenious system revolutionized communication for people with visual impairments, enabling them to read independently for the first time. Today, Braille is still attracting new users and holding its own in the modern digital age. In fact, Braille fulfills many uses that other technology can't. James Bowden, a Braille expert at the Royal National Institute of Blind People, RNIB, who's also a Braille user, said screen readers, which convert text into synthesized speech, can allow someone to digest a long document at speed, but this doesn't always provide precision. Reading the same document in Braille would enable you to spot spelling inconsistencies and go back over any complex passages or sections to memorize or critique them. Working to make assistive technology easier for blind and partially sighted people, the RNIB has launched Hable One, a pocket-sized Braille keyboard device that can connect to any iOS or Android smartphone or tablet through Bluetooth. It uses a selection of Braille key combinations to help users navigate their mobile or tablet. Health charity Sightsavers reports that many Braille users extol the benefits of the tactile communication, saying it's far quicker for everyday uses such as labelling CDs and DVDs, identifying food packaging, or organising paperwork. There are also hundreds of books and magazines produced in Braille, including novels, puzzle books, music magazines, and chess guides. There's even a Braille version of Playboy magazine, provided through the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped in America. The importance of Braille for visually impaired people is spreading. Cleaning products such as bleach have for years featured warnings in Braille, yet many organizations have now taken this further. Some supermarkets have started including Braille on their own brand packaging, and many restaurant chains offer Braille menus. It's a far cry from the world young Louis Braille experienced in the early 19th century, when there was little support available for people with disabilities and no reliable way for blind people to read and write independently. Today, Braille is used in countries all over the world and is attractive to users for different reasons. According to Juvenito Jimenez Martinez, a blind teacher in Mexico, the sound of Braille is the same as the pop that popcorn makes. He fell in love with that sound, the sound of the dots being punched on the page. Now, he's an enthusiastic teacher of this system and an activist for indigenous rights and people with disabilities, and he wants everyone to fall in love with the sound of Braille.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!